I'd like to introduce our keynote speaker tonight. He comes from East Texas to be with us tonight. He loves California and all CEA HOW members. He has 8.5 years of back-to-back abstinence, one day at a time. Long experience in retail and corporate management, and now working in a nonprofit helping up neighbors in need who are in poverty. And his name is Will G. Will you please help me welcome him?
I imagine y'all expect me to say howdy. Okay, howdy. I'm Will. I'm a grateful recovering compulsive eater. Is it good? I was born long, long ago in a land very far away, East Texas in the 50s. And now when I think about what life was then, it really was like, from what life is now, a different planet. But anyway, that's where I came from. I have, like Judy said, back-to-back abstinence for 8.5 years, one day at a time, by the grace of God. And thank you. Thanks, program. And I'm 66 years old, but my face is only 8 years old. Anyway, so in the 50s in Texas, my parents decided that I was too thin and I was too emaciated. And I started having body issues then, thinking there was something very wrong with my body. And when I think about it now, a child 7, 8, 9, having seen that there's something wrong with him, and now I think about it and I look at my pictures, I looked like all the other little boys. Like I would never wear a tank top. You know, it was just because I thought, you know, I'm damaged in some way. And so my parents, wanted to fix this. So they started giving me all that stuff we no longer eat. And big portions of it, which was fine with me. There was no problem. I never gained weight. And that pretty much continued, I think, as much as I can tell, by the time I was in high school, when I also started drinking, I was binging on food. I was already at that point. And, you know, it's the things that you think about once you're abstinent. When did all this start? I can remember in college, every day, most days, I would have 5 meals. Now, it wasn't 5 healthy meals that your trainer in the gym tells you to have 5 small portions during the day. It was 5 of the meals that we like to eat. And that seemed, you know, totally normal. After college, I went to New York. I was a fashion reporter, and there were constantly people that were giving the fashion press food and drink all day long. There were breakfast news conferences, lunch news conferences, after work news conferences, and dinner news conferences, and there was always lots of food, and I was in heaven. And it was then that I started switching so much of my diet from the basic nutritional things to things that contained a great deal of sugar. That's when it really started. And I'm only in my early 20s. So by later in my 20s, I was full-scale, way compulsively overeating. I would have huge meals and then more meals and food on the way home. There was no problem. I was never gaining weight till I started gaining weight. And then it wasn't any problem because I was in my 20s. I would gain in this fall. You know, I was like a bear or something. I would gain in the fall and lose it in the spring until that no longer worked. And about then, I think when I was 29, I was not feeling at all well. Imagine that. And I went to a clinic. And the doctor at the end of the time that I was there said, you know, you're really drinking too much. you really should not drink. And my counts weren't very good either. So right on, let's see, that was at 29, and at 40, I took his advice. You know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. About this time, let's just say the river was way out of its banks. I was much larger than a person my size should be. And I made a lot of changes in my life. I did a different, geographic. Let me just be simple. I changed where I lived and my work and everything. And I got a nutritionist. And I went on his diet. And I lost weight. And it was great for a while. It was really, really good. I think I was about 33. Well, we know what happens. It's truly awful to admit, food in hand, like it says in the big book, it's truly awful to admit, a drink in hand, food in hand, all of a sudden I'm binging again. What happened? What happened? I was so happy. Things were okay. Everything was fine. I wore the clothes that I wanted to wear. And all of a sudden, I'm 30 or 40 pounds heavier. I didn't know. I didn't know that I had the disease of compulsive eating. I would, in the 80s, we had issues. And my doctor had told me, I'm also a person that has gone to many therapists and psychiatrists and psychologists, and one of them told me that my issue was intimacy. So I thought, I get fat because I have issues with intimacy. No, Will, you got fat because you were a compulsive eater without a program and without a higher power. And without your solution and the tools, you one more time, you pick up and you're off to the races one more time. Thank goodness to y'all and to the program. I know that today, that's what was happening. So I was very, very miserable. So I thought, well, I know this. My brain is very helpful with solutions. It said, what you need to do is to get a new dietitian and a new trainer and take high colonics and massage. And so I did that, and I did that. And I lost, I got down to a size that I wanted to be. And I was miserable. I was that white knuckling trying to make it. And, of course, I got busy at work, very, very busy, lots of stress, and I started binging again. I used to say it was because I had a lot of stress. Of course, y'all know it's because I didn't have a higher power, I didn't have Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, and I didn't have the tools. And that's what I do. I was a compulsive eater there as much as I am today. And as Ray told me last night, I'm going to be a compulsive eater every day as long as I live. I'm still going to be a compulsive eater. About this time, another different psychiatrist, told me, you're an alcoholic and you should not drink. So I quit drinking, but he didn't tell me I was a drug addict. So I just smoked my alcohol, popped my alcohol, snorted my alcohol. And, of course, when I drink and I smoke and I pop, that's only part of the equation. I thought I binged because I was blowing a lot of weed. No, I was binging because I was a compulsive eater. Those last years were really my death march to a 12-step program, and I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is what amazes me, but it's my story. When I was 17 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had been yo-yoing back and forth and back and forth, for 25 years, 17 of them in a 12-step program. It never occurred to me, Will, you're powerless. Never did a first step. I had talked on the steps, done step studies. I was very active in the program. It never occurred to me. The last few years before I got abstinent, my doctor was worried about me and kept talking to me that I needed to lose weight. And then the last year before I got abstinent, he didn't tell me, and I was all ready to argue with him. My sponsor in AA started talking to me about these friends of his that he thought, he said, "Will, I don't have many friends, and if you keep going, I don't want you to die before me." He was, older than I was. That didn't make any, And he started talking to me about people that went to see Hal. And I'm like, "See Hal? See Hal what? See Hal to do what?" And then that went on for a couple years. And then I finally got to the point, why do I even bother? Why do I even bother? I like to eat healthy. I like the way we eat God's food. I like the food we eat. I like to exercise. I like to take care of myself. But truly awful to admit, food in hand, there I do that for a period of time. Here I go again. So I thought, why do I even bother? Why do I even bother? In my mind, which is so good about coming up solutions far worse than my problems, told me, "Why don't you have bariatric surgery?" And I'm like, "Oh, solution, bariatric surgery." And so I rode that horse, and I'm on the internet, and I'm studying about it for a couple weeks, and my friends in recovery were like, "What are you thinking?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I've got to do this." Well, about that time, I realized, finally, I'm powerless. I am powerless over this. And my mother's birthday was coming up in December, at just before Christmas. And you know what happens at birthdays. It was her 95th birthday. A lot of celebrations were going on. And I said, "The day after Christmas, I'm making the call." I didn't know who I was calling. But I'm going to see how you do this. So the day after Christmas, Carol and I, I do not remember if she called me or I called her, but we're on the phone, and I'm telling her this story. She said, "Will, I have 10 years in that program. Do you want to go to a meeting tonight?" "Yes, yes, let's go to the meeting." She picks me up. We go to the meeting, and they did it. We went to the CHAL meeting, regular CHAL meeting. I've never been there again. It was kind of in a distant suburb. And one of the first things they did was offer a desire chip. Well, I've been in recovery. I know what a desire chip is. You go get a desire chip. So I get the desire chip, and then they read the tools. I'm like, I'm in it now. I'm in it now. Once you get your desire chip a day at a time, you're not going, you're going to have to put in the plug in the jug about this too. And then they start talking about weighing and measuring and calling your sponsor and, making your outreach calls. And I'm like, "Oh, no." I didn't know. Of course I didn't know that how my life was very soon, very, very soon, about to greatly improve. So, it was so confusing that first week. What do I buy? What do I do? What do I eat? How do I measure? What's this? What's that? I picked up that desire chip on December 26th of 06, and one day at a time, I still have that abstinent date. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to the program. Thank you. I'm started like we all do. He has a very spiritual program. And he never comes to my home group. He showed up that Saturday. And he started being my sponsor. And he told me something that was important to me when I was a newcomer and is important to me today. He said, "Will, when you think you need more food, you need more God. Just give it 30 days. On the seventh, eighth day, all of a sudden, I had this vast, huge relief. All of a sudden, on the seventh and eighth day, and I realized it was over. The war is over. It was the mental and emotional relief. I always knew the mental and the emotional was wearing me down, but I didn't know how much until it was over. And I could drop that. And I realized I don't have to fool with food or diet or looking at diets or anything again. It's over. And the mental and emotional relief in 7 or 8 days was incredible. Incredible. I'm very glad and grateful that my sponsor gave me the program and led me through the program as it is written. Make 3 calls, yes, sir. Do 3 meetings, yes, sir. Answer your questions, yes, sir. And eventually, I picked up one of those precious, precious one-month chips. And it hit me. I'm a compulsive eater. I've been a compulsive eater for almost 58 years. I have gone 30 days, 90 meals weighed and measured. 90 meals weighed and measured? I mean, I was laughing at myself at dinner, kind of judging my portions, you know, a teaspoon of this. And, you know, I'm leveling off teaspoons and tablespoons and half cups and quarter cups, you know, as I'm cooking my food. And I think, hey, you're the guy that got the serving spoon and just opened the refrigerator. And you're doing all this. 90 meals, abstinent meals with nothing in between. So when I picked up my one-month chip and they asked me, "How'd you do it?" I knew the answer. I knew I could never have done that. That I knew, I'd say the same thing for every chip I've ever picked up because the answer is my truth. I didn't do it. I could never do this. My higher power keeps me abstinent. One day at a time, one meal at a time. I learned a lot of things going through the steps. I learned how much anger I had. And I used to get, sometimes, not often, but I would get really, really hungry. And I realized I wasn't hungry. I was really, really angry. I'm like, oh, I'm not hungry. I'm angry. And there are tools to deal with that. There are steps to deal with that. That was a big aha moment for me. A big aha moment for me. It was true when I went on maintenance, and it's true today. It's not about, for me, I'm grateful. I am very grateful that I'm the size that I am now. But that's only 10%. It is still the mental and emotional, and now I know the spiritual relief from the program of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. How? I remember what it was really like. I remember coming home, and there were 3 7-Elevens, and I would stop at every seven, all three. You know, I'd have been, by the time I got to the second one, the third one, I wanted more food. I know what it's like to pass out crying with food wrappers and crumbs in your bed, and you're waking up in them, and you know it's going to happen again. And I've started feeling before abstinence, before program, that I really wasn't even a person in a body, that I was just sort of an energy force, just pushing myself through life. I don't do that today. I live life today because of the program. But I remember, that's one thing I am also so grateful for. I remember what it was really like. You know, it wasn't, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a little taste of something? A little taste of something, please. I want your taste and my taste, and it was never enough. And people sometimes ask me, you know, what did you binge? You know, what foods did you, you know, get high on? I said, oh, my choice was more. Whatever it was, more. Because there was never enough. There was never enough. But like I said, I remember. So in the morning, when I say my prayers and I say please, I know what I'm saying please for. At night, when I go to bed, I know I've been abstinent all day. I don't have that little itch. You know, was that portion right in the restaurant? You know, I know what I'm saying thank you for. Lately, I have gotten in touch more and more with my inner soul. I was taught in recovery, and then in AA, and also in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, that my soul was pure. It wasn't damaged. I wasn't that little damaged boy anymore. That I was a precious child of God. And that all God wanted for me was to take care of myself, be happy, and help others. So thinking in the terms of my soul, I'm thinking about also food. And I realize I wasn't nourishing my body. I wasn't nourishing my soul. I was poor. Every time I was binging or overeating or eating inappropriately, whatever you want to call it, however it seemed to me at the time, what was really happening is I was pouring acid on my soul. And my soul was crying out, please, no more. My soul doesn't have to do that today. My soul doesn't have to do it today. You know, someone left a piece of candy up here, or whatever it is. A piece of something. And, you know, sometimes some kind people who are very kind, they're not in the wrong, they just don't know, and they'll say, oh, you can have one bite. You know, they're very nice, they're polite, they're hospitable. And I think, how could this one little bite of something be worth my emotional, mental, and physical peace of mind? You know, when I see all that stuff we can't eat, I think, how could that, even if there was a lot of it, how could that possibly be worth what I have today? So I have started saying my prayers not only with a remembrance of what it was like, but also praying on behalf of my soul. That when I say that please in the morning, with whatever prayers I'm saying, basically the last thing is that please. I'm not only praying for it not to be the way it was, I'm praying on behalf of my soul. Please keep all that acid, that awful stuff, away from me today. Just today. a couple things that I'd like to share with you that happened to me that are such a testament to the program. After I lost my weight, I had been misdiagnosed by my doctor and given a medicine that was working against me. And I got quite ill. A lot of things were out of kilter. It had nothing to do with losing the weight. And I went to some high-level nanopathologist, dietitian-type person, because I was not too happy with my regular doctor. And she did a full battery of tests, full battery of blood tests, and the results were translated into nutrients and vitamins, and she knew that I had just lost 80 pounds. And so when I went back to her, she said, I have been doing this work for 25 years. I have never known one person that has lost 80 pounds that isn't deficient in all of the nutrients and vitamins. But you're not deficient in anything. And of course, I'd given her the gray book so she could understand me. She said, everybody in the world ought to be on this. You know. I have a lot of friends in Dallas that I imagine could greatly benefit from this program. And I don't know, about eight of them have gone to meetings with me, good friends. And none of them have stuck, and some of them have gotten in really bad shape. One of my friends had gotten up to 500 pounds. He was on the highest dose of insulin that his doctor had ever heard of. And I 12-stepped him, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. And after hearing about it and learning about it, he said, I don't think I can do that. And I told him, I can't either. But being 500 pounds, having to be in a wheelchair, on the highest dose of insulin, the disease was so strong with him, and he eventually died from it. To mention, people that die from our disease, so we remember it's fatal. It's fatal. I believe that it's not only fatal as the last result. It's a slow death for your life, your being, your emotions, your spirituality. It's a slow rotting away. But not today. Not today. Y'all have taken me from that very damaged person and turned me in to the grateful, recovering, compulsive eater that I am today. Thank you.